This is the case of Equestrian Ridge Homeowners Association versus Equestrian Ridge Estates 2. Council, good morning to you again. And as you can see, six members of the court are here in courtroom. Justice Miller Lerman is participating by WebEx, and she will introduce herself.
Good morning. This is Justice Miller Lerman, participating by WebEx. Thank you, Chief.
She is obviously able to hear and see you and ask questions. When you are not presenting today, please keep your masks on. And if you are a spectator, please keep your masks on. When you are arguing to the court, please take your mask off so that we can hear and understand what you have to say. Does anybody have any questions before we begin? I hear no questions. So, Mr. Welch, good morning to you. You may approach and you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honor, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Dave Welch. I represent the defendant appellant in this litigation. I'd like to reserve 1 minute for rebuttal, please. This is a case that stems in equity. There is part of it that might be a legal issue, which is a question of law in regards to the contract. But for most parts, it's a question in equity. It's a de novo review in that respect. Now, our story starts back in 1995. Ted Grace, Dwayne Dowd, and the Dowd Grain Company form Equestrian Ridge LLC to develop a residential area out near Gretna, Nebraska. It's 160 acres. In 2004, Ted Grace files a lawsuit to dissolve the LLC as things weren't working along the way they anticipated. So in 2004, November 30th, 2004, an agreement is entered into, which is a crux of this particular lawsuit. The members of that agreement, Ted Grace as the manager of the LLC, Dwayne Dowd, and Dwayne Dowd as president of Dowd Grain Company. So at that point in time, this agreement's entered into, and they cut ways, and they're each going to develop their own 80 acres out there at this development. The key in this agreement that was entered into at this time states that Dow Grain will, through subdivision agreements, covenants, and provisions applicable to homeowners associations or any combination of the foregoing, subject the Dow Grain subdivision to a sharing of 1/3 of the cost of expenses of Equestrian Ridge. So that's our key language at this particular time. And in regards to Dow Grain Company, they are the ones that become the declarant in creating the covenants for Equestrian Ridge Estates 2, and in regards to the association HOA that's created in regards to this matter. Now, at this point in time, we go to 2007. Dow Grain incorporates the HOA for Equestrian Ridge Estates 2. 2010, he files with the Register of Deeds the covenants that this contract in 2004 required him to do. So he satisfied, or Dow Grain Company satisfied, the conditions of this agreement. Okay, this agreement has no time frame. It doesn't say it lasts forever or in perpetuity or anything of that nature. It just indicates that Dow Grain will, through these subdivision agreements or covenants, subject the subdivision to a sharing of the cost. And he did that within the covenants that were filed with the Register of Deeds in 2010. And within those covenants, he indicates that these covenants run with and bind the land, period. And then in the next sentence, these covenants may be amended. And he sets forth criteria for how they can be amended. First amendment would be by Dow Grain Company itself, within that first 5 years as the developer.
Did you leave out in perpetuity?
I think it does say in perpetuity, Your Honor.
Does that matter?
No, not in this particular case, because it's all part of the same. You got to read the, as we all know, you read the contract as a whole, you read these covenants as a whole. That sentence ends and that next sentence begins. I think it's clear the intent of what the contract indicates is clear and unambiguous in that respect, that these covenants can be amended. And the case law in Nebraska allows for covenants that run with and bind the land can be amended if they're done correctly. And in this particular case,
if any of those cases, have we ever addressed a modification provision that purports to change a provision of covenants that by its terms says cannot be modified?
I haven't read a case that indicates that. In this particular case, with us, there is within the Article 6, Paragraph 3, the provision that indicates clearly that these can be amended. In the case law, as in the Regency case, clearly indicates that you can amend covenants that run with and bind the land. And in this particular case, they were filed with the Register of Deeds in 2010. In 2015, the declarant released, Dow Green Company released its duties and obligations as the declarant in 2015.
If we adopt your view of the meaning of that document, what effect are we giving, if any, to the words in perpetuity?
I think it's clear that if it indicates in perpetuity, but along with in perpetuity, it indicates it can be amended, then it can be amended. That's what the document indicates in that respect. If that language wasn't in there, it couldn't be amended. But because it is in there, it could be amended. And in 2016, Equestrian Ridge Estates 2 HOA correctly amended the covenant.
Doesn't your interpretation effectively read the words in perpetuity out of the document?
No, it does not. Everything's applicable in perpetuity unless it's amended pursuant to the document. Nothing else could be done unless it was amended correctly by the HOA in this respect. 60% of the homeowners had to agree to an amendment. The covenants.
Maybe I should back up. What do you think the word perpetuity means?
I think it means forever.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
But with that word, with the caveat, with the amendment that's part of that same paragraph, it's clear it can be amended. They run in perpetuity, but they can be amended if done correctly. You can't just disregard paragraph 3 within Article 6 of the covenants. Dowd Green is the one that was the declarant. Dowd Green is the one that filed those covenants. And then the homeowners of Equestrian Ridge Estates to buy their homes, they see this covenant, which clearly indicates to them they can amend their covenant.
Does Dowd Green still have an obligation to maintain?
No, it does not. It never had an obligation to maintain. All Dowd Green Company as the declarant in the first 5 years was to contribute to one-third and then one-fourth of the cost.
They still have that obligation?
Dowd Green does not. Once they left, okay.
How did they transfer that obligation?
The HOA would then take over, but it's not a successor in interest type issue, but they would have taken over any obligations pursuant to the covenants.
They had an obligation to maintain the road, portions of the road, cost share up to a certain point, and they could just amend that obligation unilaterally?
Yes, they could, because they're not a party to this agreement. This was an agreement that was satisfied by Dow Green.
Did the Homeowners Association, their clients, accept the duty in the that Mr. Dowd had or that Dowd Green had at some point in time?
Yes, they did.
Did
not ratify. In 2016, when they would have taken over, and they identify at that time that they came in, they amend in 2016.
But at some point in time, they also paid.
They did. There was payments up to the end of 2015, my recollection.
Is that significant?
No, it's not. Not in this particular case, Your Honor, because they properly amended their covenants. They're an innocent party, free of fault, and they're allowed to exercise their legal right, which they did, was to amend this covenant. And in regards to the, if you go back to the 2004 agreement, and if you read it, everything within that agreement was satisfied by Dow Grain Company. There's no breach of contract in this particular issue. It all gets down to whether this covenant can be amended and whether it was amended correctly. And the law allows covenants to be amended, the declaration of covenants, restrictions, conditions, and easements, which they particularly did in this particular case. And therefore, they satisfied their obligation in what in amending their covenants. They amended their covenants, and they stopped paying their contribution.
I beg your pardon. May I ask you a question, sir? I think your introductory remarks referred to the case in equity, but now you're drilling in on the contract or agreement language. Can you help us reconcile your approach?
Yeah. What I'm saying is there's seven theories of recovery in this case. Six of them are equitable. The seventh is contract, but it's a question of law. It has nothing to do with the fact issue. And so as far as this court is concerned, as far as the question of law, as the court knows, the court needs to make an independent, correct decision in what the law is in this particular case.
So your belief is that what we have at this point in the litigation is a question of law presented to this court. Is that right?
That's right, Your Honor. In regards to if you look at the contract aspect of the case.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do we have any factual issues in this case?
Not to my knowledge. I don't think there is. We stipulated to the facts, stipulated to the evidence. It was a bench trial that was tried within a half hour to an hour, and everything was submitted on the record at that point in time. In regards to our case, we have a case where the trial court says they prevail on most, if not all. If is a conditional word. I don't know what he meant per se, but it's not all. So it's unclear on what condition, what theory of recovery the court actually thought was satisfied. But I can walk through each and every theory of recovery and indicate that they do not pertain, they do not win in regards to that issue, in regards to that theory. These covenants were properly amended, and as we know, the law allows for amendment, even though that covenant said perpetuity within the same paragraph, within the same, this next sentence afterward, it clearly indicates that these can be amended, which they did in this particular case. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Ms. Loka, good morning to you.
May it please the court, counsel.
And you may remove your mask.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Amy Loker. I represent Equestrian Ridge Homeowners Association, who's the appellee and plaintiff in the district court. I'll refer to my client during this argument as ERE and the appellant as ERE 2. ERE respectfully requests the court affirm the opinion and order of the Sarpy County District Court in ERE's favor on all of its theories of recovery and its judgment of money damages, specific performance, and an injunction against ERE 2.
What theory did the district court judge use to come to the conclusions that the court came to?
Thank you for your question, Chief Justice. The district court held that ERE prevails on most, if not all, of its theories of recovery. There are several theories of recovery that ERE set forth in its complaint, including both legal and equitable theories. The Nebraska Rules of Civil Procedure do not require the district court address any or all of ERE's theories of recovery.
Well, what theory do you think the district court came to its conclusions about?
Well, our position is that ERE prevails on all of its theories of recovery, including the legal and equitable theories. And ERE 2 suggests that the district court erred somehow by not addressing each of those theories. But again, the Nebraska Rules of Civil Procedure do not require that it do so. ERE 2 never sought any post-trial relief, never filed a motion to alter or amend the order. And that's why we have the order that we have. At the heart of this case, there are two separate but related contracts. the agreement and the covenant. And both of those require Erie to pay a portion of the cost and maintenance of 232nd Street. 232nd Street is a private road. It's maintained by ERE for the benefit of the homeowners in both subdivisions. 232nd Street connects directly to Shiloh Road and provides ingress and egress to the homeowners in the Equestrian Ridge Estates 2 subdivision. Since ERE 2 has stopped paying its share, ERE has continued to faithfully fulfill its maintenance obligations, including shouldering the entire cost of those.
The original cost sharing agreement was between ERE and Dowd Grain, is that correct?
The agreement was signed by Dwayne Dowd individually and as president of Dowd Grain Company, Inc., and Ted Grace individually and as president of Equestrian Ridge, LLC. That agreement dissolved Equestrian Ridge, LLC, and divided the original Equestrian Ridge Estates subdivision between Ted Grace and Dowd Grain Company, Inc.
And created this cost-sharing obligation.
Correct. Dowd Grain Company, Inc. then filed the related Declaration of Covenants, Conditions, Restrictions, and Easements, signed and filed with the Sarpy County Register of Deeds, that, again, also requires Erie 2 to pay a portion of the costs of this maintenance.
So that's how the obligation gets to Erie 2.
Correct. Erie 2 is both a successor in interest to Dowd Grain Company as to the agreement, and the covenant binds the land owned and controlled by Erie 2 and
in perpetuity.
In perpetuity.
So how do you reconcile? It seems to me that let's assume that that's where the judge really decided this. How do you reconcile that with what Mr. Welch concentrates on in the declaration, which is that this can be amended?
Well, there's an important distinction between the declaration and the covenants. And the declaration it's a document that gives life to the covenants. The covenants are only a part of the declaration. A grantor of land can create a covenant in different ways, including in a declaration. He could also do so in a deed. And covenants are a form of contract. They need to be enforced according to their plain language. The language of the covenant here is clear and unambiguous that it runs the land and binds the land in perpetuity. And the declaration allows the declaration itself to be amended, but not the covenant. It specifically singles out covenants that run with the land and bind the land in perpetuity. So ERE 2 has focused on the procedure that it used to amend this declaration, but that's not the issue in this case. We don't dispute that ERE 2 followed the correct procedure to amend the declaration, but it simply has no effect on the covenant because the covenant exists in perpetuity.
Could they amend the declaration to take out the language requiring the covenants run in perpetuity?
No, we don't believe they could because, again, it runs in perpetuity. The plain language provides no mechanism by which that covenant could be changed. And to address Justice Castle's question earlier, if the court were to ignore the language of runs with the land and binds land in perpetuity, that would give no effect to that language and would simply render it superfluous. And the court must consider all of the provisions of the contract.
So are rendering side with you on that issue, are we rendering the part of the declaration that says this can be amended, making that?
No, because there are other items of legal import in the declaration.
So and other things can be amended, but the covenants can't.
Correct. So that's clear from the title of the declaration. It's a declaration of covenants, conditions, restrictions, and easements. So the covenants and restrictions run with the land and bind the land in perpetuity. all of those other provisions presumably could be amended. Additionally, Equestrian ERU 2 is a successor in interest to the agreement between Dowd Grain Company and Ted Grace. And ERU 2 characterizes the purpose of that agreement as the settlement of a lawsuit and a dissolution of Equestrian Ridge Estates. But it's contradicted by the plain language of the agreement, which specifically provides that one of its purposes is to share the costs of maintenance of 232nd Street, and the district court so found.
As a successor in interest, would it have the ability to unilaterally change the agreement?
No, because ERE is a third party beneficiary to the agreement. So ERE has an interest in that agreement as well. So ERE 2 would only be able to terminate that obligation with the agreement of the third party beneficiary, ERE.
Which they did not have.
No, ERE 2 never gave notice or sought the consent of ERE to terminate this obligation at any time.
How does the successor and interest obligation you're arguing for, what way are the ERE 2 successor and interest?
Dowd Grain Company, Inc. developed the Equestrian Ridge Estates 2 subdivision. And in the declaration, it gives ownership and control of the common areas, which include 232nd Street, to ERE 2. So that's how the successor in interest.
Because they own the same land.
Correct. They succeeded in ownership. And if not ownership, they at least succeeded in control of that land, the common areas. If the court finds that there is no express covenant in this case that requires ERE 2 to pay its share of maintenance costs for 232nd Street, there is an implied restrictive covenant that we believe arises. And an implied restrictive covenant requires a common grantor of land who has a common plan of development for the land. And it's clear from the language of the agreement and the declaration that these original developers of the two subdivisions had a common plan of development, and that included access to the Equestrian Ridge Estates 2 subdivision via 232nd Street. I see I'm almost out of time. ERE would respectfully request the court affirm the decision of the Starkey County District Court on all of its theories.
Let me ask you about the remedies. Is it a declaratory judgment, right?
Correct. That was one of our theories.
So you got some money for the past dues that were not paid.
Correct.
Then the court went on and said, ERE2, you can't ever do this again, and you have to do certain other things.
Correct.
Did the court go beyond why was the amount of money that you got not adequate? I mean, and was the did the court have the power to go beyond that?
ERE 2 stopped paying its share of the cost of maintenance expenses in 2016. So the monetary judgment was the amount that it owed ERE from the time it stopped paying until the time of trial. The district court further ruled that ERE 2 could not unilaterally repudiate this agreement in the manner that it did, and that it could not do so in the future. Now, we believe it could do that with the consent of ERE, but it did not attempt to do that at any time.
Thank you. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
Yeah.
That then concludes arguments in ERE Homeowners Association versus Equestrian Ridge Estates 2. Council, thank you very much for being here today. When you leave the courtroom, please leave by the side door to my left. And please continue to social distance and use those masks if at all possible. Again, thank you very much.